Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode from Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. Here we are again, three global experts on one of the probably the most unique podcasts in the world at the minute, with three separation anxiety trainers, one from the UK, one from Australia, and one from the US. I'm Sarah McLaren. You'll find me in the UK at Separation Anxiety Solutions, and with me is...
Well, that was a lovely introduction, Sarah. I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And we are also joined by...
Hey, I'm Stacey Bell in the US at Focused Fun. Okay, today we're going to talk about something a little bit different that it does involve some separation anxiety dogs and also some non-separation anxiety dogs, and also to do some clear up some misconceptions. I was combining misconceptions. I was combining misconceptions and myth, and I wasn't sure which way I was going to go in that. Misconception.
That must be Stacey's word of the week, then, isn't it?
It's a new word that so you're clear that it's not true. It's like a double. Anyways, clearing up some misconceptions and about independence building while training and all that kind of stuff. So it might be a little bit of a twisty journey today, but we're going to cover a lot of good stuff.
Yes, thank you, Ness, for the compliment with regards to the introduction there. I felt the need to say that because it was brought home to me this week by a friend of mine that we, in the podcast land, we really are unique, because I can't think of anyone else where you get three people from all across the world who actually come together and have similar working practices and opinions and work in the same way and all do the same kind of work. So I just wanted to put that out there that, you know, this is, we are fab. Yay.
Not to toot our own horns or anything.
No, but we are allowed to toot our own horns, because people like to listen to us waffling on about separation anxiety, because we give them good advice and help. This week is all about that myth conception, isn't it, with the things that I get asked this a lot. I'm assuming that it's the same for you guys. And there's two things that get asked a lot. And one is this idea that you need to leave your dog in another room on its own in order for it to gain independence. Mm-hmm. And that somehow that will prevent separation anxiety, or it will help them develop independence in the long run. I'm not quite sure. I'm not even sure where it came from, to be honest. Has anybody got any, is it an old separation anxiety technique, or is it just what people think?
I think, I agree. I get asked it a lot as well. Should I be doing this? Perhaps it's to do with bringing puppies home, and that's where it stemmed from.
Do you think it's an old working dog thing? I mean, I remember as a child growing up when people had, where I lived, grew up in Yorkshire, there was a lot of people with working sheepdogs, and they were often kept in the kitchen or in a shed outside. They were very
they were muddy.
The house. You what?
Because they were muddy.
Probably.
Well, it gets so also wet and muddy in England, so, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that we do get a bit of that, but there's also this kind of, there was this perception that they weren't pets, you know, they were working animals, therefore they weren't in the home all over the sofa and things like that. I mean, I'm assuming that some of it comes from there, but where it comes from now with this idea that even if it's not in the kitchen, it just seems to be this, we need to be able to leave them. They need to be able to stay in a room on their own, regardless of whether we've left the house or not.
It's certainly something that a lot of trainers would recommend with a puppy, bringing a puppy home. Yeah, and I'm guilty of it. When we had our first puppy as an adult, that's exactly what we did. We put him in the kitchen that first night, and God, he screamed, and literally, you know, he was so upset. It breaks my heart thinking about it, but he didn't stay in there long. We were like, he's coming in the bedroom with us. So he didn't even spend a full night in the kitchen, and that was it. After that, there was no dogs separated in the kitchen, and I've never had a dog with separation anxiety, by the way. So yeah, it didn't affect any of my dogs, and I'm on my sixth now.
Yeah, that's another, it's another one of these kind of like misconceptions, isn't it, where they think that if the dogs are allowed to spend time with them, that they'll develop separation anxiety, therefore they need to spend time in a room on their own. So while their owners are cooking dinner or in the bathroom or something, that the dog must learn to stay in the living room or the kitchen or another room or something in order to learn to be on their own. But one of the things that we teach people is how to teach dogs to be in a separate room without upsetting them. Because once you know, like you say, if you leave a dog in a room and it's screaming, that's not achieving anything, is it?
No. I must say, though, it is tricky going to the bathroom when you've got an audience of three just literally sitting there looking at you.
Yeah, that is tricky. That is tricky. I guess for me, there's a lot of different things kind of going through my head. One is I've always had dogs that have shadowed me around the house, have, you know, come and watch me go to the bathroom, will settle on a mat near the kitchen when I'm cooking. And, you know, our current dog has some anxiety surrounding separations, but not what we think of when we're talking about separation anxiety. So some, I guess, more separation related behaviors. But so all of my dogs have always followed me around the house, and all of them have struggled if I put a gate up between them and I, right? Mm-hmm. But none of them really have separation anxiety the way that we would think of it. So for some dogs, being separated while you're home is actually more difficult than you going out the door, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think for a lot of dogs, those are just two different scenarios, right? The second thing is if the dog is separated from you and not feeling safe, then you're not teaching the dog what you're trying to teach the dog, right? So you're trying to teach the dog independence. But in fact, if the puppy is in the kitchen, miserable and crying and afraid, and, you know, if it is a puppy, possibly cold or, you know, like whatever needs not necessarily being met in, and they're not learning that it's safe to be alone either, right? Mm. So I think
could actually have the opposite effect, couldn't it? I mean, if it's exactly, in that situation, exactly, it's going to be, as soon as it sees you, it's going to cling to you like a life raft. So mm-hmm. you could actually be, in a sense, creating a problem as opposed to eliminating mm-hmm. one.
Right, right. And so I feel like, and I would say that we all feel this way, is the way to create security and independence in a dog is to help them feel safe, right? If they if they don't feel like they have anything to be afraid of, then they're not clinging to you because they're anxious, right? They're
And I will say about that puppy years ago, I mean, it was years ago, and I was not a dog trainer back then, and I just went on the common advice. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what everybody said to do, and that was how I grew up as well. So my when I was like born, there was an adult dog, Tosca, but after that, when she passed, we got a Labrador, and my dad was like, nah, dog's outside, and he spent his nights in the laundry, and then during the day he was outside, and, you know, he was not part of the family in that respect. Yeah, which is so sad now I think about it. That's why my dogs are inside.
When you're leaving a dog in another room, you know, when you're leaving, like you say, Stacey, if it is a puppy, if you leaving a dog in a different room behind a baby gate, or if you're closing a door, they don't know why you're leaving them in there. They're not, like you say, they're not learning anything. They've no idea. All they know is suddenly they've gone from being a part of everything and the family or whatever to suddenly being left on their own.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, they're social animals, aren't they? We know that dogs are very sociable, even more than we are. So leaving them alone without any assistance or any kind of like training towards that is, you know, it is going to have the opposite effect. They are just, they're either going to fall into helplessness or basically carry on until they get to a point where frustration turns into fear, which then, you know, the world just falls apart.
So what do you guys think about independence training in terms of putting a dog in place, for example, or giving them something to eat, like a Kong, and then moving yourself to a different area of the house? So we're not talking about a barrier, but maybe tying them up to something so they can't follow, or just, you know, ensuring they've got a good place command and leaving them there.
I guess for me, I have a couple thoughts about that. One is, I don't feel like it necessarily benefits the...
Hello, Rowan.
He's got something to say, I think. We've got a guest on the podcast.
Okay, yes, because I forgot to mention that today's guest is Rowan. He said that he thinks separation is a bad idea. No, honestly, for me, because I'm always trying to streamline the training and work on what will make the biggest difference in you getting out the door, I don't typically work on that type of thing unless it really bothers the pet parent that the dog is following so much. Like, because basically some dogs just follow, right? Mm-hmm. Whether or not they have separation related behavior, some dogs just follow. And like I said before, every dog that I have ever had has been a follower. Because we have bred them to be social animals, right? So some dogs just follow. If your dog is following more out of vigilance because they're afraid that you're going to leave them, that usually subsides once you start managing absences. So not leaving them more than they can comfortably handle and start doing the training. So I find that that indirectly creates more, you know, independence, if that's what we're calling the not following, in dogs than actually, you know, having them stay on a mat. So that's kind of, you know, but some people are really bothered by their dogs following them. And then in those cases, we, you know, prioritize training, just, you know, and try to balance what would benefit the people and the dog in that relationship and their goals the most.
Mm. Yeah, I don't worry about following either. And if, you know, if they go and wait, follow them to the door or whatever it is, or the shower or the kitchen, it doesn't bother me as long as they're not stressed, obviously. But yeah, you're right. Some people do. I actually had an assessment yesterday with a client, and a very, very young dog that was in kind of zoomy mode, and it was just wanting to play, and it was cutest little thing, cavoodle. But yeah, she opened the door to do like a 1 second absence, and the dog was like a little rocket out the front door.
Oh no.
So we're like, and she couldn't stop it, because, you know, like little fast dogs are, you know, they're kind of hard to block.
Yep.
and didn't have any kind of enough obedience, let's say. So it knew sit, but it didn't know like a solid sit stay or anything. Like there was no chance she was going to stop it from sneaking out the door. So we had to put up the gate. And this is really interesting, getting back to what you were saying, Sarah, is that as soon as that gate went up and the owner was on the other side of the gate and opened that door, she hadn't even stepped out, that dog went off its head. So and unfortunately at this point in the training we have to use a gate because the owner can't, you know, it's the only option we've got at this point. So we're going to be doing a lot of door desensitization around the gate and then the door. And then, yeah, but anyway, it was a really good example and kind of proves the point of the barrier being, you know, making things worse.
Right.
If that's the right way of saying it, but yeah, complicating issues anyway.
Right.
Barriers are huge. And I think especially with baby gates, it seems to be, you would kind of think, oh, well, because they can see me through a baby gate, that will make things a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you guys, but I found it very rarely makes things easier. I mean, I know when Ernie was like this big, you know, you put him behind a baby gate and he'd just, you know, the world would end. And I'd be like, well, just stood here, you know, and it's definitely one of those things where if it's something in the house. And so like in my house, most of it doesn't have any doors. I mean, obviously we have outside doors, otherwise it'd get pretty chilly, but we don't have a lot of internal doors. So we do have baby gates so that I can put them in different parts of the house if I need to open the front door or something. And that's taken a lot of work to get them to stay behind baby gates and be happy. And that's one of the few training scenarios where I would use food, because it's not a separation anxiety issue. I'm not doing it because I'm dealing with separation anxiety. I'm doing it because I'm training them that being behind a gate is a good thing. And in order to help with that, then that is something that you could use food for. And the other thing, I think you mentioned it briefly, Ness, was about the mat training, which is another thing that's very useful for keeping them in a particular place in the house.
Right, right.
Like you said, I think you said, Stacey, about cooking.
Yes. Yeah, I use it big time for cooking and eating. Rowan has, you know, is part lab, so
say no more.
Yes. So that's interesting. So that's kind of one piece of it, I think, that, you know, and it kind of, I think, dovetails into what we've discussed on the crate podcast about how just more space and more choice tends to help separation anxiety dogs.
And it's the same. It's the same with young children, isn't it? With separation type issues, if you allow your children to spend more time with you when they're tiny, they develop more confidence than if you try to constantly put them in another room.
Right.
I've got Harry Potter in my head now. I need to not go down that road.
That's funny.
Have you not seen Harry Potter, Ness?
Yeah, I have, but I don't know. I can't think what you're referring to.
He's in a cupboard under the stairs, isn't he? Initially.
Oh, yeah.
When he's little. They keep him in a cupboard.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about, and this is another thing I kind of hear a lot, is what about when you're, you know, because a lot of separation anxiety pet parents take their dogs everywhere with them to help manage absences. What about when your party splits? So you're walking together and somebody goes into the shops, or you're having lunch and somebody goes in to use the bathroom. What do y'all think of that in relation to, you know, is that a separation anxiety thing or purely a separation anxiety thing, or just kind of a normal dog thing, or what?
I think it's a bit of a combination of that barrier frustration thing where they're on a bit of string, so they can't follow everybody everywhere, and they do tend to like their families to stay together. But I've also seen dogs that have no issues being left at home alone who also fall apart when one member of the party leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I don't think that it's, one isn't necessarily symptomatic of the other. Is that the right word?
I don't think it's exactly the right word, but I know what you're trying to say, and I can't think of what the right word is. So we'll just go with that for now. And then if we think of a better word. Yeah, I do think that's true, is that they're not necessarily linked. And we've certainly had dogs in the past that couldn't handle, even if they're not, like we would go on a hike and we would separate, but the dog would be off leash and he couldn't even handle, like, you know, not even like a barrier type of thing, but just the party being split. Yeah. That's really difficult for a lot of dogs.
And they are upset as well, aren't they? It's not just, you know, people think that they're maybe being playing up or being spoiled or something, but no, they're genuinely upset when one member of the party goes, and it can, you know, and again, that can lead into, if left to its own devices and if they're left to do it enough, or if you do it enough, they become more and more sensitized to it. And eventually it turns into more fear than frustration. And, you know, it just gets worse and worse.
I mean, if you're struggling with that as a right now with your dog who also has separation anxiety, I think I would say it's just about priorities and training, right? So if you're having that struggle with your dog and it's something that you want to work through, it's definitely something that you can work through, but, you know, do you want to work through at the same time you're working through your other, you know, building duration with your dog being home alone, or do you want to kind of work with them one after another?
That I suppose too. It depends on how often you're going out and how often
I
that's happening.
So. Yes, I think so. And I think it totally depends on the circumstances. I agree. If it's something that happens every once in a while, then I probably wouldn't worry about it straight away. But if it's something that happens somewhat consistently, then it is something that you'd want to tackle.
So if you're doing something like a school run or something like that, where two of you go, you know, walk up to school with your children and you take the dog, and then one member of the party goes off with the children while they go to school, and then the other one's outside with a dog who's going, raw, 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 you know, they might want to work on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, you get it when you're at a coffee shop or something, and one of them goes in to pay, or at the petrol station when one of them goes in to pay, it can be an issue. So, it's an interesting one. And I mean, you have to wonder what's going through the dog's head. Is it a case of they don't want to split the pack up, or, you know, is it a case of hyper attachment, but not necessarily? I mean, could be a combination of things.
Mm. I mean, we can treat it the same though, can't we? I mean, you can still use the same kind of process with that as we would with anything else. Only again, it's another one that you can use food for. So we can use the conditioning for that, or classical conditioning for that, to help them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You can totally use food. And it's, you know, won't go into the whole protocol here, but it is about, it's similar to the training for building duration at home, in that you're starting with what the dog can do now comfortably and then building that. The difference is that you can use food. The same thing too is that you don't want to expose the dog to a bunch of iterations of splitting the pack, if that's what's going on, and them being unhappy about it, right? Because that's just building up negative experiences to that scenario. And so you just want to try to manage that where you can.
If you were at a coffee shop and one of you wanted to go in and pay, so if the other one, sometimes it's not as bad if one person walks away with the dog before the other person gets up and leaves.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes you can do it that way around, and always make sure that you've got something nice and tasty in your pocket. Not necessarily a sausage roll, but, you know, something that the dog would like, and make sure that you've got it with you. So then when you do walk, whoever walks away can feed the dog while they're walking away, while the other person goes and does what needs to be done.
It's interesting. You just reminded me, Sarah, I had a consultation with a lady this week, the Great Dane, and she's found cover for her dogs when she's not there. So she's doing the right thing, managing her absences. But what's happening is, so she's getting one of her sons to come round to her house while she goes out. So she's leaving the dog, and the dog's reacting to her not being there because she lives on her own. And I'm like, well, why don't you get your son to take the dog out while you're still there, and then you can leave? Just that slight, subtle difference could help that dog cope better. So when it comes back, it probably is not watching her leave every time.
I noticed that, and that makes a difference for a lot of dogs when they're part of the ones leaving versus being left. It can make a huge difference.
Yeah, I've had a couple of clients that have had massive success with that, where they couldn't leave the house at all. And just the fact that they got the partner to take the dog out while they left, and then the partner came back and the dog never saw them leave, has just changed everything. And it's amazing how one little difference like that can make so much change in a home. Well, it doesn't work for every dog, though, does it? We have to say that. Some dogs are still like, no.
Some dogs can come back and search the house frantically. I would say a dog that does that might be more hyper-attached to one person than just have generalized separation anxiety.
Yeah, I think so. But then just getting back to restaurants, that type of thing where, you know, if somebody has to go in and order or pay is, you know, I think in the short run, while you're working through it, just try to frequent restaurants where they either have like a window that you can go up to, you know, that's facing outside so that you don't have to go in, or have wait staff that come out. Like everything, it's not going to be forever. I feel like that type of thing is faster to work through than, you know, building up the duration at home. What do you all think about that? Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, because I think although they are, in the truest sense of the word, they are anxious because they are separated from a member of the family, it's not separation anxiety the same way as being left home alone, is it? I mean, being left home alone is a whole different ballgame to one member of the family leaving when you're out and about, because you've still got the other member of the family with you, or members, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever scenario you've got. The likelihood of you leaving your dog tied to a table while you go pay for your meal is much slimmer, I think. Or at least I like to think, I hope. Maybe not a petrol station. A petrol station's a funny one, because quite often then you get a case where maybe you're leaving the dog in the car while you have to go inside and pay for petrol. That's a whole different ball game.
Right. Most places in the US you can pay right at the pump.
Yeah, not everywhere in Australia has that option.
It's a bit hit and miss here as well. You find that it tends to be supermarkets that do a pay at pump option, but normal general forecourts that you get, not so much so.
Yeah. And then you can do, for that, if there's not somebody else in the car, then there's always the remote feeding devices. Yeah, I mean, certainly give them like a Kong or something, a frozen Kong or something like that, but then
snuffle mat.
Yeah, or a licky mat or something. But you could also do like a Manners Minder, or what's the tutor one called? Man, I can't remember.
Is that a pet tutor? Is it a pet tutor?
Yeah. Although some dogs will just knock the whole thing over and eat it, but you know.
Especially in a car. A lot of owners with dogs with separation anxiety report that it's the house that's the issue. So when they take their dog in the car and go and do the petrol thing, the dog's fine. But obviously,
that's
not
another one of
them.
Another one of those funny things, isn't it? Where some dogs, that they'll quite happily stay in a car for hours. Obviously, you've got to make sure that, you know, it's safe and that temperatures are good and all that kind of thing. But for some dogs, going to you know, staying in the car while the family's at work, or, you know, that kind of thing. And again, it's one of those things that can make a massive difference.
Yeah. And so if you're looking at, you know, if you're bringing your dog with you because as a way to manage absences, then I think that's giving you a quality of life back, right? So it's giving you an ability to maybe meet some friends or family or do whatever. So if that is the case and your dog struggles when you go in to use the toilet or pay or whatever, then I would say in those cases, if it's happening frequently, like we're talking about, then it is worth working through it. But if it's a, you know, happens once a month kind of thing, then I don't know.
It's difficult, and it's difficult to know. I mean, for us as trainers, I mean, even we prioritize things that we do at home. You know, there's certain things that some of us do and some of us don't, because for us, it's, you know, it's not a problem or an issue. And I suppose, you know, it's the same with your owners, isn't it? They've only got a finite amount of time in a day, like everybody. And it's exactly. Where do you put all your energy in?
Yep.
But you'll be pleased to know, dear listeners, that wherever it is that you decide to put your energy, that contacting any of us professionals will help you massively, because for all these things, we've got plans for it.
Yes,
we do. You know, we can give you plans that are, what's the word now? Efficient, and that work well, and that will get you where it is that you need to be with these things, you know, such as you having to go pay for all the meals that you're going to have once you're out of lockdown, and all the friends that you're going to go visit, and all the coffees that you're going to have. So we can help you with all that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I've even worked with other trainers on their separation anxiety dogs, and it's so interesting to me because they know what to do, right? Mm. But just having somebody give them plans to follow, you know, takes a lot of the mental space of, and I think it's also different when it's your own dog. I think sometimes you don't have the emotional distance. And we talked about this before on the show. But just having a plan to follow not only makes your training so much more effective, but also so much more efficient, right? So you're going to get results more quickly, which is what we're all after.
Yeah. And of course, not having to think about those plans either, having some, you know, like you say, somebody presenting a plan to you and saying, right, there you go, there are all your steps, this is what happens, this is what doesn't happen, off you go, makes life so much easier.
It really does. Mm-hmm.
Jumping back a little bit to where we started, I wanted to tell you, I did a poll in my Facebook group, which if anybody is interested in joining, is Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. But I did a poll asking what's the silliest advice that you've been given in terms of your dog separation anxiety, and one person was told to put the dog outside and leave it there. And it's kind of like, well, going back to what we were saying about, you know, that's going to create, you've got a barrier, because it's a good chance the dog can see you in the house and knows you're there, or if you leave, I suppose you've still got that barrier, but B, you're creating a dog that is needy as opposed to, and not, it's not learning independence. I just thought it was quite funny that there's all this old school advice still out there.
Well, it's a bit, it kind of reminds me of the difference between, what we tend to do as dog trainers, or as, you know, people who work with dogs, is when we get young dogs, they're very rarely out in gardens alone or outside alone. We tend to go out with them. We tend to toilet train with them. We go out with them. We reward them. We go out in the yard and we play with them, or we go out and we do things. So they're very rarely left alone to vocalize. They're not left alone to dig holes or to jump over fences or do all those things that other people have problems with because they put the dog outside in the garden and just shut the door. And that's when you can hear puppies in the neighborhood that are howling because they're left outside and all they want to do is get back in. It's like, and even if normally, if you were out there with them, they'd be gallivanting around the garden having a whale of a time. But because you've shut that door, you've created a whole other problem, haven't you? Which wasn't there before.
Oh, do we have another special guest on the show? Who's this?
This is the puppy next.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, but you don't know what you don't know, do you? So,
no.
It's what we were all taught.
What else did you get? What else did you get on your poll? I'd be interested to know what other.
Do you want to hear them?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard. Oh, that the dog was spoiled. Because she lets the dog live in the house, stay in the bed, because she brushes her and grooms her, takes her to the park and takes her swimming. So therefore the dog is spoiled.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just a dog, get over it. Yeah, we've heard all that one. Those ones before. This is a good one. I like this one. I mean, I don't like it. So someone writes, they were told that I need to be the alpha.
That's a big myth conception.
Isn't it? Another one was told, my dog just needs to get over it. Oh, this is terrible. Chain her up outside. It's a dog.
Eek.
Chain her up outside. It's a dog. And this is probably the icing on the cake. Just get rid of him. He's just a dog.
Oh.
And that was said helpful. That was said to somebody who they thought was a friend, and I don't think they're friends any longer.
I had a client this week who contacted a local dog walker I can't remember if it's dog walker or daycare, and the answer that they got from them was, "I'm not a trainer, but
yeah,
you know, are you spoiling? You know, are you? It's something to do with you. You're doing it. You're spoiling the dog. You're causing it. Blah blah." But it was that I'm not a trainer, but I'm still going to give you my advice, even though I've got no education whatsoever. I'm still going to, and it's like,
yeah. I think when you hear I'm not a trainer, but just disregard anything that comes after that.
After the butt, run 8 miles.
I mean, if you went to the dentist and your dentist went, I'm not a dentist, but you'd be like, no, stop.
I'm good.
Yeah, put the drill away.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Everyone's got an opinion.
I did make my dental appointment. When Ness and I were on the week you were out, Sarah, she said something about the dentist. And I was like, oh, must call dentist. And I did make a dental appointment. So.
And so have you been?
I haven't been yet, but I made the appointment. It's not for another maybe week or so.
And have you got trepidation around going to the dentist?
No. I'm fine with my biggest thing is picking up the phone to call and make the appointment. For some reason, that is so difficult for me because I'm not sure why that's so difficult for me, but it's always been something that's doctors, not just the dentist, any kind of appointment.
Oh, right. Okay. Maybe it's to do with the phone. Dentist.
So I can use going to the dentist as a good analogy for people with medication, because I'm terrified of the dentist and have been for a long time, and I had to have a tooth out before, actually just as COVID started creeping out, and my dentist agreed to give me some sedation. So nice. I had some oral sedation before I went and sat in a chair, and he pulled a tooth out, and I don't remember much of it, really. I was as happy as Larry. I remember him saying, we're finished. And Danny drove me home. And I think I came home and went to bed for a couple of hours. And I was happy, 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 and would happily go back to the dentist any day you like if I could have that nice oral sedation again.
Right.
And it's like, if sedation for your dogs is as good as that, then I would say any day. If you're, you know, when it comes to I know that we can use situational medication for our separation anxiety dogs. And if it works like that, I'd say any day, give it to them. Because they're going to feel a damn sight better than they do without it.
Well, and I think there's just a difference between the situational meds. I mean, not that we want to go down that road right now, but some of them are quite sedating and then others wouldn't be, you know, they would just kick the anxiety level down. So.
Yeah, mine was, it was a very short acting thing. So it wasn't something that stayed in your system for hours and hours. I think some of the things that you can have as human beings can be quite hard on your system, can't you? But this wasn't. It was very quick. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy. So yeah, I can go to the dentist. I'm okay.
Well, certainly that kind of thing is good for vet appointments.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chase had to have an operation and she had something, but she was still a bit stressed. So I'm not sure if it was either the wrong one for her or maybe not the right dosage, or her stress levels were just that high that it didn't have quite the effect that it did on Sarah.
I wish I knew what it was. I'd be like, yay!
I guess it's up to people whether they want to teach their dog kind of that independence training around the house. You know, it bothers some people.
I think so. I think it really does bother some people. And, you know, if it bothers you, then it's a priority. And then we make a plan to help you through it, right?
Yeah. And if it's something that, you know, if you need to make sure that they can be in a particular room for something, I don't know, maybe, you know, you get visitors or, you know, like some people provide piano lessons at home or something, so they need the dogs to be, you know, people who work from home can't always have the dogs in the same room all the time. So if it's a, like you say, if it is a priority, then it's something that we can help with, but it does need to be done properly. It's not just a case of just shutting the door and they'll get used to it, because as we know with all this kind of training, they don't get used to it. If anything, they tend to just get worse and louder and more destructive, and it's not a road that you want to go down. If you do it right from the beginning, then the chances are you'll end up with a much happier, much more relaxed dog in a room on their own.
Oh, another situation where I see it a lot as a point of struggle is where the dog is not allowed upstairs for some reason or another. It could be other animals in the house, like the cats are upstairs and they're downstairs. And sometimes the pet parents need to be upstairs for whatever reason. And so I see that a lot, and it will stress the dog to be separated in that way.
We can say on here now, can't we, that your dog going upstairs per se is not a problem. You won't create separation anxiety by letting your dog go upstairs or by letting them sleep in the bedroom. If you want them to stay downstairs because you've been told that they should stay downstairs because it will create more independence, or that dogs shouldn't be allowed in the bedroom because it will create some imbalance in your relationship, we can categorically state that that's not true, that, you know, letting them in the bedroom won't make any difference to your relationship. It might mean that you get a better night's sleep.
Oh gosh, yes.
Can your dog get a better night's sleep?
Okay, so today we've talked a lot about whether specifically training to create some independence for your dog is a worthwhile thing to do. And I think what we've decided is, like the answer to a lot of dog training questions, it depends, right? So if it's a high priority for you, we can definitely help you work through that. But if it's not, and if your dog's following is due to their anxiety and vigilance as such as of being alone, then frequently that resolves kind of on its own. There are obviously a whole host of situations and circumstances where being separated from you, like in public spaces, might be difficult, especially if it's a group of people. And again, we just talked about how that would be, working through that would depend on how much of a priority it is for you and how often it's happening. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Stacy from Focused Fun. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs. On my website is focusedfun.net.
And you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren from the UK at Separation Anxiety Solutions. You can find me on my website at www.separationanxietysolutions.com and on my Facebook page by the same name and on Instagram.
And I'm Miss Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia, mate. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and other good listening apps. Other than that, have a great week, everybody, and thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.